Imagine that the person you love the most, your mate, your child, your parent, has been in a serious accident. The injuries are extensive. Skull fracture, brain lacerations, pelvis and fractured legs. The left arm is paralyzed. There are severe abdominal contusions and a ruptured urinary bladder. Your beloved is left deaf, blind, speechless, without reflexes, has been in a coma for 2 months, and the doctor says there's little or no hope. Even if your beloved survives, he or she will never be normal. Should you, could you, pull the plug? This is not a theoretical or academic problem. Given our modern medical gadgetry, persons having such extensive injuries can be kept breathing. Someday, you, too, may be called upon to make that kind of a plug-pulling decision. I once attended a seminar on terminal illness conducted by a doctor, a lawyer, and a psychiatrist. The doctor touched upon this subject, saying that if you had a patient who was unconscious and in a hopeless condition, he would follow the wishes of the family. Our imagined case might be a relatively easy one to decide, for the patient has been in a coma for some time. But let's consider a more difficult situation in which someone near and dear to you has a terminal illness like cancer. He is conscious and in unspeakable pain, begging to die. Would you permit the doctor to mercifully put that loved one out of his or her misery? Or would you, should you, give that person a pill so he or she could do the job themselves? This is the question of euthanasia. The word euthanasia comes from a Greek root which means good death. More popularly, it means easy death or mercy killing. The purpose of euthanasia is to make easier a death that is inevitable. Is it wise to do that, or is it wrong? Is it mercy, or is it murder? What I'd like to do is give the arguments for it, give the arguments against it, and give it a biblical evaluation. So let's start with the arguments that are used for it. There are many. For example, many people say that the person has a right to die. Joseph Fletcher of the New Morality fame equates the right to die with the hero who gives his life for a cause. Others contend that when meaningful life has ended, so should life itself. According to this viewpoint, human life consists of mutual service. Adherents of this view believe that when all usefulness is over, when a person is assured of an imminent and unavoidable demise, it is a human right to choose a quick and easy death in place of a slow and horrible one. Another argument, the pragmatic one in favor of euthanasia, is that the amount of money it costs to keep the person alive by machines is prohibitive. Some Christians would argue for euthanasia on the basis that a suffering person should be shown mercy. They would point out that the Lord himself said, quote, "Blessed are the merciful," end of quote. If there were a Christian or a biblical argument for mercy killing, it would be that of compassion. After all, it can be argued, we accept that it is a kindness to end the life of a suffering animal. If putting a horse out of his misery demonstrates mercy, why not equally be merciful to a suffering human being? At any rate, those are the arguments that are generally given for euthanasia. There are arguments against it. Most Christians would argue that the scripture is against euthanasia. For one thing, the Bible teaches that life is sacred. It is a gift from God, and we have no right to take it. They would point out that the psalmist probably faced death as much or more than anyone in Scripture. Many psalms express personal misery and eventual death. Yet the psalmist's plea is never for death, but for deliverance and continuance of life. For example, Psalm 22, verses 19 through 21 say, "But you, O Lord, do not be far from me. O my strength, hasten to help me. Deliver me from the sword, my precious life from the power of the dog. Save me from the lion's mouth and from the horns of the wild oxen." End of quote. Psalm 88 contains a long list of expressions for the nearness of death. Quote, "For my soul is full of troubles, and my life draws near to the grave. I am counted with those who are down in the pit. I am like the man who has no strength, adrift among the dead, like the slain who lie in the grave, whom you remember no more, and who are cut off from your hand. You have laid me in the lowest pit, in the darkness of the depths. Your wrath lies heavy upon me, and you have afflicted me with all your waves. You have put away my acquaintance as far from me. You have made me an abomination to them. I am shut up. I cannot get out. My eyes waste away because of affliction." End of quote. The psalmist did not describe death as sweet or welcome, but rather what he desires is deliverance and restoration of life. In the dozens of psalms that portray the writers as painfully near death, we never find expressed a desire for the end of life, but always a plea for the restoration to a full and active life. Then, there is the one specific example of euthanasia in the Bible, the case of King Saul. He was mortally wounded in a battle against the Philistines. He pleads with one of his own armor-bearers to stab him to death to prevent either a slow death or humiliation at the hands of the victorious Philistines. The aide refused. The problem with this example is that 1 Samuel 31 says Saul fell on his own sword, but 2 Samuel chapter 1 says Saul requested a bystander to finish him off. Either Saul fell on his own sword and did not kill himself, or the Amalekite of 1 Samuel did, and the Amalekite wanted to gain David's favor. There is definitely no contradiction between the two accounts. Remember, these two chapters were originally one book written by the same author. Be all that as it may, 2 Samuel 1 assumes euthanasia, and we can learn from that whichever way it actually happened. Let me explain. There is a classic description of the reason for euthanasia. The response of the bystander is precisely that of the practitioner of euthanasia. The Amalekite was convinced that since death was certain anyway, he might as well shorten Saul's life and put him out of his misery. David responded by having the Amalekite killed. Thus, the one clear case of euthanasia gives no justification for it. The man who practiced it lost his life because of it. The New Testament reminds us that the Old Testament was written for our learning. Based then on the sacredness of life, the case of the psalmist and the case of Saul, one would have to conclude that the Bible is against active euthanasia. At this point, a clarification needs to be made. Euthanasia is commonly divided into two classes, active and passive. Passive euthanasia involves a refusal to use life-sustaining medical equipment to prolong life when there's no prospect of recovery. Active euthanasia involves purposeful action to end a person's life. The difference between the two is the difference between refusing to prolong life and artificially shortening life. Passive euthanasia was unknown in biblical times because there was no life-prolonging equipment. This is important. Christians have rarely objected to passive euthanasia. In fact, Francis Schaeffer and Dr. Everett Koop co-authored a book and a film series entitled Whatever Happened to the Human Race. They say, quote, "To use non-religious terms, the issue is motivation. It is his motivation or intent that a physician keeps uppermost in mind. He must constantly be aware of the wonderful uniqueness of human life. Of course, at times, he faces difficult decisions. Once he believes that the technical gadgetry that he is using merely to prolong the experience of dying rather than extending life, he can withdraw the extraordinary means and let nature take its course while keeping the patient as comfortable as possible. This is what physicians have done for years in the realm of trust between the patient and the physician, or between the patient's family and physician. This is truly death with dignity, and no mere manufactured euphemism for euthanasia." End of quote. This is not a question being debated today. However, it is not doctors with biblical view of life who are debating the cases in which death is imminent and inevitable. Rather, it is the whole new breed of medical and paramedical personnel for whom the issues go much further. With these individuals, the intent is to advocate the death of a patient either by directly killing the patient or by doing nothing when they could be giving help and support that may result in life, even though the circumstances might be difficult. This irony is called mercy killing. I know a pastor in Florida who would not give a doctor permission to operate on his father who was dying of cancer. The pastor told me, quote, "For years I have watched people in my church have this operation. I knew that if my father had it, he would be in pain until the day he died. On the other hand, I also know that if he let nature take its course, he would die in peace. He was old and saved and ready to go. So I refuse to let the doctor operate." End of quote. Sure enough, the father died in peace. The point is that the Bible does not speak to the issue of passive euthanasia, and traditionally, Christians have not opposed it. Active euthanasia is another issue. That is the deliberate act of shortening life. That is what the Bible is against. It is unethical and in many places illegal. But the way things are going in our country, it's going to become more widespread. For example, Joseph Fletcher has called it ridiculous to give ethical approval of ending a subhuman life by abortion, but has refused to give the same approval by ending a subhuman life by positive euthanasia. Of course, by positive euthanasia, what he means is the actual killing of a terminally ill or mentally defective person. Malcolm Muggeridge has called the path from abortion to active euthanasia a slippery slope. We're on the verge of replacing the sanctity of life with a quality of life ethic. So, let me talk about the biblical alternatives. It should be pointed out that the Scripture recognizes two alternatives to active or passive euthanasia. The first is the opportunity for recovery. There are many cases in the Bible of terminal illness or injury where there was no hope of recovery and yet there was miraculous healing. There are 8 cases in the Bible of temporary resurrection from death itself, from 1 Kings 17:22 to Acts 20 verse 10. Such a priority is placed on the goodness of life and even a temporary resurrection of this current miserable existence is seen as a blessing from God in all 8 cases. That is the major problem with active euthanasia. There is always the possibility of recovery, and active euthanasia prevents that. But not all recover. Some suffer. Should we not exercise mercy and end life for them? The Bible never applies mercy like that. What it does teach is that God has a purpose in suffering. For one thing, we are to experience His power during periods of pain. The scripture says, quote, "And lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan, to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord 3 times, that it might depart from me. And he said to me, My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong." 2 Corinthians 12:7 through 10. Spoken by and written by the Apostle Paul. There is benefit in suffering. Matthew 5:4 says, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted." A person who mourns in this life may well be fortunate or blessed above a person who does not. In fact, the Bible even extols suffering. Quote, "Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you as though some strange thing happened to you, but rejoice to the extent that you are partakers of Christ's suffering, that when His glory is revealed, you may also be glad with exceeding joy. If you are reproached for the name of Christ, blessed are you, for the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. On their part, He is blasphemed, but on your part, He is glorified. But let none of you suffer as a murderer, a thief, an evildoer, or a busybody in another person's matters. Yet if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in this manner. For the time has come for judgment to begin in the house of God. And if it begins with us first, what shall be the end of those who do not obey the gospel of God?" 1 Peter 4:12-17. James says, quote, "My brethren, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. Indeed, we count them blessed who endure. You have heard of the perseverance of Job and have seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful." James 5:10-11. Suffering should be endured as necessary to spiritual growth. To sum up this discussion of euthanasia, I would say, although active euthanasia was possible in biblical times, the scripture does not condone it, but rather condemns it and offers the alternative of recovery and the realization of the benefit of enduring suffering. Simply put, passive euthanasia may be wise. Active euthanasia is wrong. Passive euthanasia is not morally or biblically wrong. As a pastor, I've had to advise several people on this subject. I tell them that they're not violating any biblical principle by not using or continuing extraordinary medical procedures. On the other hand, active euthanasia is morally wrong. Yea, it's murder. At the moment, it is illegal in most places. But remember, it is that slippery slope from abortion to euthanasia. It is coming, and we should be informed, armed, and ready to speak out against it. One British doctor has said that a death pill will be available and perhaps obligatory by the end of the century. He was suggesting that such a pill would be given to old people if they were sick and asked for it. He has also concluded that ultimately he can see the state taking over and insisting on euthanasia. Christians should be informed, just so such a thing never happens in this country.